My man, Jason Lombardi. So if you could just tell the people a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you know got into what you're doing right now.
My name is Dr. Jason Lombardi. I'm an assistant professor of research. I'm at the Cesar Cleaver Biolife Research Institute at Texas A&M University at Kingsville. I do research in endangered ocelots, actually like a small wild cat that's the most endangered cat in the USA, and it's in Texas. So them and like bobcats and coyotes and stuff like that. But originally I was from northern Jersey, about 12 miles outside of New York City, so suburbs, New York metro area. So not in the woods, not working outside, not hunting. You watch Discovery Channel, you go to the zoo, and maybe go to the museum, but that's like the extent of like my childhood.
Right. Totally different up Jersey, right?
Oh, it's and like, yeah, you can go hiking and shit, but there's so much to do. Living 12 miles from Manhattan, it's like there's so much to do. Like, you can be in Jersey, go to New York. It's comparison to here. So I live in a small Kingsville, Texas. It's only like 32,000 people here. We're about a half hour from Corpus Christi, which has like 300,000 people in it. But between there and here, it's flat and it's farm fields.
Right. Damn.
Made up of, like, I go 12 miles from here and you're in the middle of nowhere. So it's here, then you drive 45 miles to Corpus, but there's no other like thing to do in between there.
Bro, being a city boy, you already know. I couldn't even imagine, bro. How do you do it, bro? How did you get out there originally? Like, so walk us through. Like,
yeah. So how I got here? So we can start. So I went to the same college as you, obviously.
Yeah. Well, excuse me, Dr. Lombardi. I gave everybody Jason Lombardi because I know him personally, but he is the formal and you know, he is the official Dr. Lombardi. You got to give, you know, the man the cahoots for that one.
Yeah.
Congrats, bro, for that one. But as you were saying, though, we went to the same school.
Yeah. And then like, but when I graduated, I had no plan. Well, like, I wanted to get my master's. I would have loved to one day get my PhD. I had no plan, and I was overconfident and really had no idea how to even pursue graduate school. Like, I had no idea what the process was, what courses I needed to take, how to do internships, like the shit that I tell undergrads now, and they kind of have a sense of what I'm talking about.
Right.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
and cool. So, because like in college, because there was no graduate program there, so it wasn't like you can gain experience and shit. And I was all about like being in the fraternity, and then the summers I was just got like jobs like working at like a Italian restaurants or something. So like that was my
normal college stuff. Like normal
college shit. And so it's like you go home in the summer, hang out with your friends, and you just so I wasn't even thinking like I should get an internship during like my sophomore summer and an internship into my junior summer, internship into, because then you go for this and you're doing shit outside getting experience. Whereas my thought of an internship in college was, oh, you go work in an office.
Right. And that's definitely
like, and so I graduated, just started working at the restaurant again for that summer. Like I did not have a job, did not have an internship lined up. I mean, like, I didn't have anything lined up. except trying to decide, do I live in Jersey at my grandma's house or move back to my parents' house who just moved to Florida? But it's like, I can be home with my friends or then decide I'm just going to move to Florida where I know no one and then start working there. So,
and what did you take up in college?
Conservation and wildlife management. But I really had no idea what, no, I can't say I had no idea. I had no idea what the field of wildlife management was when I started college, because in high school, like all growing up as a kid, I wanted to just study animals in the wild, not in a zoo, and like research on them. But I had no idea what everything else was and shit. Like my great uncle hunted. So like I was aware of that and I knew some of the things, but I didn't really know anything. So graduated college and I ended up getting an internship, an unpaid internship in Florida, actually in the town that my parents were living at a time in Jacksonville, Florida. And I watched a pair of wolves that whole summer, red wolves. So for 5 months, I sat in front of this exhibit for 5 hours a day.
Taking notes and
like, yeah, just literally watching the animals, and then every like 15 minutes, I'm just saying what they're doing. So it's like, but just doing that, and
some real patience for that. Real patience, bro.
Yeah, and so here's the thing: that was summer 2010. There was no such thing as an iPhone then.
Right. Oh, yeah. They had just came out. It was summer 2000.
Yeah,
you know, right. They came out, but like 10, nobody was thinking about it. Yeah. Like they were still like, trying to take over the world.
So think sitting there 5 hours a day and not having a phone. I can just
right.
Like, yeah. It's strange because that was literally like only 10 years ago, which
I'm sure you had a lot of peaceful and contemplative thoughts in that time. What am I doing here? How did I get here?
Yeah.
Where am I going?
Yeah. So I got done with that one. I moved back up to Jersey, cooking at my house, and I worked at the restaurant. And then I got a job in Washington State and at Olympic National Park, and which is out in, it's west of Seattle. It's in a temperate or cool weather rain forest. So like all those tall ass redwoods and pines and spruces and shit. So, and I knew it was working in the mountains, but I don't think I realized how high those mountains are and working in them until you actually get out there.
Right.
Because like I'm in Jersey and like I've been to New Mexico and stuff, but I was not like, that was like, here's my knowledge up to that point, and this is where the mountains are. This is where you should have been to start. And I was here, but I kind of was overconfident thinking I was here when you had to be like, yeah.
And the biggest problem, I'm guessing, is climbing up.
So it's just hiking up. And so I was there for a week. We go on a hike. It's my first backcountry tour. So that means you go into the backcountry for 5 days just with the food on your back and whatever the case may be.
Just living off the land, basically.
Yeah. Or we were looking for owls. And so it was actually the spotted owl, which is an endangered animal or a bird.
This was an owl, you said?
Yeah. And so that's a bird that's got a lot of press in the Pacific Northwest. But so I was out there for a week, and then I tore my hip flexor and my groin. First hike, boom.
Bro, so did you like? Well, go ahead, tell a story. I know you got some juiciness coming in.
So I did it. So in the end, it was only a grade one. So it wasn't that bad. But when it happened, I didn't want anyone to know I was hurt. So that day, it was a 11-mile hike in. Mm-hmm. And I tore it at like mile four. Now, think about this.
Champion mindset.
You could walk that 4 miles back to the truck and go home or go back to headquarters and then go into town and go to like a hospital or some kind of like urgent care facility and get it checked out. That would be the smart thing to do.
Normal person.
My dumbass thinking, I'm not from around here. They know that. I need to prove myself. I hiked the 7 miles further.
Damn.
To where we were supposed to go.
Bruh. And why did you do that? It was just you wanted to prove yourself to them, like, or to yourself? Was it more or less to yourself or them?
I think it was a self, but I also didn't think it was that bad. So it's almost like that sentiment where you're like, oh, I'm fine. It's a little I can hurt, but you're like, no, what? I'm fine.
Right.
And because then, like, so I woke up the next day and I tried to take a step. So I sat in that cabin for 5 days and then they sent in horses and to get me out. So I had to ride a horse out.
Wow.
Got back, rehabbed for about 3.5 weeks. The guy that hired me wanted to fire me, but couldn't. Because I was injured, so he that'd be on. And so I literally said to him, I said, "When I'm healed up, put me back out." And I healed up. I was still kind of like in pain, but I busted it out. Was right. There for 4 months. Saw some awesome places, but that was it. And so then I left. And so at the time, I had tried to get in grad school. I was accepted to New Mexico State, but they accepted me, but said, because the funding to pay you ran out, so we can't bring you on. So just to give people background, in the wildlife field, when you go to college, they put you on an assistantship. So what that is you work for the college or work for the department, and they pay you to do your master's research among your PhD research because you won't have time to get another job. So it's almost like, so they're paying you to do your PhD work.
Be a student, basically.
Yeah. And then you pay tuition on.
Right.
And so the funds of that payment are usually attached to the projects that they're doing their research on. So the cash doesn't come from the university. The cash comes from those projects, and that goes to the university. And so I didn't have, and so I worked in Jersey or at the Italian restaurant again. And so for 10 months working at an Italian restaurant, trying to get into school. And of course, then you're just like, 24 at the
that
time.
That age where you're like really confused and you don't know really what you want to do.
Yeah,
right?
it's like I'm 24.
Why am I existing?
Working. It's like, what the hell? This is not what I want to do. And then when I like tell people and stuff, they're like, you want to be a park ranger? I'm like, no. They're like, you want to be a zookeeper? I'm like, no. Like, you want to be like a forest something. And so like, because people back home just have no concept of it.
I get it, bro. They like put you in a bubble. They put you in a bubble and it's like,
you know, like
it's all the basic, I guess, entry level type of jobs that you would think of for that, you know.
And it's almost to the point, it's like, it's the kind of job that people back home would say, you know, I would love to do that. You're so lucky. Like, I would love to do that. Or it becomes like this job that is kind of like this exotic
fantasy type job.
Right, job. But like, well, when you're here and you would tell someone, they're like, oh, okay. It's that whole
absolutely
mindset. And so there was a professor in college that I, Howard Ayer, he taught like a dendrobiology course. And so he went to colleges, even off Austin, East Texas. And so I knew about the school. So I looked into it, found two professors who I was interested in working under. The both of them decided to try to get a graduate assistantship for me. And ultimately, they told me, well, you have a space here if you want it. So I moved to Texas.
Took the opportunity.
Took the opportunity to really create my own project. That's the kind of shit in my field that just does not happen. So like they basically said, we have these funds, we have these cameras, but we don't have a project. And so that's what yours is. You decide what you want to do. So it's, and usually that like does not happen.
So how did that process look for you? Figuring out a project.
I moved down there, worked for my first advisor, for my master advisor that summer. And then basically it's like I have to know like the species that I want to work with. And then you're just trying to decide, okay, well, like, okay, so that's the case. And I have, and we're using cameras or it's a motion activated camera that you would put in the woods. You use them for like deer hunting, but you can use them for all animals. So for me, I wanted to do stuff with bobcats, coyotes, fox, raccoons. And so we just decided to do a course, me from Jersey to a urban project. So like my research was in town and we set cameras out in the parks, in behind people's houses, on farms and stuff. And so it was like, of course, the kid from Jersey moves to Texas in a small town, kind of like this, and in the middle of the woods, but it was like a college town.
Mm-hmm.
The university was not like a Delve Out. It had like 10,000 people in it. It was Division I college basketball. There was like tons of like fraternities and sororities. Like, there were
basically a real college.
Yeah, right, yeah. It was not like where they went. So I was there and it was fun. And then I got done. And so I started to kind of gain the experience thing. And so I took an internship in Northern Michigan and to work up there in the winter time. So in January, February, March, when it got down to 35 below zero.
Woo.
And I was working outside and snowmobiling and hiking around, and it was 10 below, 15 below.
Bruh.
In snow.
You survived. You're still here. You're like, that's like Guinness Book type record. Cold.
Yeah, cold. Yeah, so like.
And that's totally different than like Jersey, like that. Just for the people that don't know, like that's like a good, we'll say 20 degree difference, 30 maybe. Like,
Yeah.
You don't really get that cold up there like that.
Yeah, no. And so what happened was, is that I was there and then I got a job for the University of Georgia. And so when I was down there, so I was basically hired on as basically to do research. They were like, we have this cache and we want to do camera surveys on like weasels and skunks and wood rats in Shenandoah National Park. And they're like, that's what we want to do, but you design how. And so I was paid as a full-time employee of the University of Georgia. I got to live in Shenandoah National Park for 5 months.
Yeah, that's cool.
But it sounds cool. But the first 2.5 months, they put me in a cabin in the national park with no running water.
What?
Your stove and your fridge ran off propane. You had electricity that you could turn on for an hour a day. And there's, when you're at the cabin, there's no cell service. So you can't use your smartphone and no radio service. So even if you want, Yeah. That's
crazy. Did you have like protection? Because you're in the middle of the woods. So like, do you have any guns, knives?
Not allowed to have any guns.
Wow.
And so then I got moved to the research station, which actually had like electricity and like it was a normal house. That was good. But like when I was up there, you're constantly encountering bears. Constantly.
So I was about to ask you, like, what were you like encountering up there all the time?
Now, like, you're in the mountains. So like the picture behind me, it's from Virginia. And so there are times I would literally hike. And so there was one time I was hiking to one of my cameras. And so it's like a cliff. So it's a little cliff just like just drops off. There's a cliff, there's trees, and then there's a trail. So I had to walk up the trail. And what you had to do, walk up, and then the cliff line goes in. Right. And the other cliff line goes in too. So it kind of doesn't get as steep, and you can walk down until I had a camera there. And I'm walking along. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning, not really paying attention, walking along. And so I hear something, and I look up, and 25 yards in front of me is a bear on her back with the cubs
nursing.
Yeah. And then the one cub sees me and runs away towards the cliff area. The other one looks at me and runs the other way. Then the mom just, now for everyone that is listening, a female bear in the wild is one of the most dangerous situations you could be in. I shit you not. There's a reason you carry bear spray on your side, and bear spray is like pepper spray times 100. It's intense. You spray it when they are charging towards you, and they stop.
Damn, so, they're tracks.
They're the tracks. But when you're 25 yards away, if that bear wants to charge you, you won't have enough time. And so that female just leaned forward and looked at me, but I was downwind of her, so she couldn't smell me. She could see something, but it couldn't smell me. And so I just was like, oh shit. And I just slowly backed up, turned around, and ran as fast as I could.
Run. Survived that one.
With a backpack on, because I get the fuck out of here. Nothing. No. Just,
you survived that when someone loves you.
Yeah.
Someone, a lot of people don't make it out of that type of situation.
No.
That sounds like a movie.
Yeah, dude. And I'm like, there was another time. It was like pouring rain. And I go hike down this like forested like patch and stuff. And there's trail in it that's like wide and clear, and that's the trails that the bears were going down. And so it was clear, and I stepped into this trail thing, and I'm walking, and then now note, it's foggy as hell, it's kind of raining, it's kind of, I can't really see a lot, I can see some, and then I hear
oh man,
like I mean, panting loud in my ear, and I turn around, there's no bear. I turn the corner, no bear. Turn the other corner, no, I can hear it. I don't know where the hell it is, but I can hear it.
Wow, bro. I know you were like shitting your pants. Yo, I know you were shitting your pants, bro. I had an incident like that one time when I was camping and I was in the tent, and it was like when I was real, real young, bro. And I was maybe like 13, 14 years old in school. We all went on a camping trip, Boy Scouts, and we were asleep, and I know exactly that panting that you're talking about, bro. Like, it's a hell of a pant, and you know when you hear that pant what it is. Like, there's no other animal that I could ever, like, even pinpoint that type of pant to. And I woke up to that pant, and I saw, like, the bear in the silhouette of the tent, in the, you know, the moonlight shadow. And I just, you know, I just went back to sleep. Like, I'm not even gonna bullshit you, because I knew not to like wake up my friends that was in the tent with me, because they were gonna panic and shit like that. So I just said, you know what, I'm going back to sleep. And I guess it was the best idea, because I'm here today. So, but I know exactly that pant.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So I got done with that, and I had like 2-3 months left on my contract. It was September 2015 at this point. So I got done with the field work, and I moved back to Athens, Georgia for that fall. Now, note, I'm working at the University of Georgia. So I went from small DelVal working in Jersey, or growing up in Jersey, going to East Texas, go up to Michigan, you're in Virginia. Now I'm at University of Georgia. That's a major college, major university, big time, like campus in the middle of town. Then it's just bar, a street of bars, another street of bars, another bars and breweries. And like when you're over there, the bars closest to campus are called the, I shit you not, the freshman bars. That's all the bars that the freshmen with the fake IDs and shit, they go to there. Then like, and then the street in between that, the juniors and seniors and like, or like sophomore, like you can kind of tell. And then as you get to the back street, then it's like all the finer restaurants and like breweries and stuff. So yeah.
They segment everybody.
And so like, it's really, and so living there on my own in this town, and so like being a single, and it's just like you're just taking all that in. And so that fall, I saw a PhD position here. And so it was working on ocelots, which are an endangered cat. They look like a jaguar, but they're about the size of a bobcat. So they're about 35 pounds. No, they're about 22 to 28 pounds or so.
Still about a nice size. That's a nice size cat, bro.
Nice size cat. They're beautiful. And they're in the United States. They're only found in Texas. So like, can give you all the ideas of like how rare they are. Like, you don't hear about them regularly and everything. And so I sat on that application for 2 weeks. So I was like, there's no way in hell I am going to get this thing. It's I'm thinking it's super competitive as hell. And so I applied. Then my current boss called me on a Tuesday and was like, hey, can we talk on Friday? I'm like, okay. Talked on Friday. Went out that night. On the following Tuesday, I talked to him again, and not 10 minutes into the conversation, he's like, well, if you want the PhD position, it's yours if you want it. And I'm like stunned, because I'm like thinking, a week ago, I hadn't even sent you anything, and I was just not going to apply at all, because I'm like, there's no way in hell, like, I have good experience and stuff, but like, this is just like, and so he gave me that opportunity and was like, well, you haven't been to South Texas before. It's like East Texas. It's a small town. It's not so bad. I left Athens in January 2016 and moved down here. No, I moved down here, but I couldn't find a place in town because I got the position like a month before I had to be there. So I ended up renting a room at a graduate student's house that was 10 miles from town. Now, remember back at the start when I said I lived in Kingsville, and it's 45 minutes from Corpus Christi, but there's really nothing in between. Mm-hmm. My first 9 months here, I was living in that nothing in between in a house. It was a double wide trailer home that was on a farm.
Wow, bro.
So literally, I would go out to
nowhere for real.
I would drive into town to go to the bar, but as I walked out, I'm stepping in chicken shit. It's all over my car. There's pigs. There's turkeys. I'm like, where the fuck am I?
Who's the owner of these chickens?
What are you doing? And I'm like, cats. You're here for the cats.
Yo, that's too funny. So how did you get to the oscillates? Like, what was the that? Because that's where your doctor is degree is focused on. So how did you get to that? Like, to that point of deciding and going with the oscillates? Like, did you catch them on camera one time with the cameras that you had, or were?
Yes. So my boss has been doing oscillator research here in South Texas since 1982. He's the expert, considered the world expert. And so he had the access and everything. And so we set cameras. We work at the foundation, the ACE Foundation, that does a lot of education-based and science-based research on the properties in South Texas that they manage for land stewardship, cattle, and then also wildlife. And then there's also where we set box traps that has a pigeon inside. The pigeon does not die. It's alive. It has food and water. Right. The cats cannot get to the bird. But the cats walk in the trap, and then we catch them, tranquilize them, and put like GPS tracking collars on them. We'll back them up, we'll let them go so we can see how they're using the landscape. And so that's really, so I have been doing that the last five, or I did that for my PhD. And over the course of my PhD, I gave talks in Nevada and Kansas, New Mexico, Washington, D.C., and all over Texas. I gave a talk in Italy. I gave a talk in Switzerland. And so I got to really travel the country a little bit and go overseas first, and meet people from all over. And so I graduated with my PhD in May. So I graduated, and so my PhD was, I was looking at how ocelots are what types of habitats or what characteristics of the habitat influence where the ocelots are, and then also how they interact with the bobcats and the coyotes. Mm-hmm. And so that was like my PhD. But I graduated, but I never actually got to put on the whole like doctoral gown and shit because of the COVID. Because canceled the whole in-person graduation. So I couldn't so I graduated, but the formal thing where they like say, okay, now you're.
You didn't get the experience, really.
I didn't get the experience.
The whole point of the hard work and going through everything that you went through, you never got
to like have that moment and shit. And so it hasn't happened yet. And so if I could do it at a future graduation on my WOBA, that would be cool. But if it is what it is, it's like, okay, in my whole life, I didn't get to experience that, which is like a big thing. I think it's
great. Oh, yeah, that's super big, man. And congrats again, bro. Like, I guess if you were saying your mentor or your teacher that was knew so much about the oscillus, he's like the god almost to it, you know. And now, like, I guess you, at least from what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, you're like his protege, bro. Like, you're the next best thing after him, you know, just based off of like you doing the research and taking the time and you being up under his wing. I'm sure it's so much that you've learned that is really valuable going forward with the ocelot habitat and just their lifespan and everything that revolves around them.
Yeah, it's getting that and learning here. It was good to have that opportunity. And then in the summer, I became my current assistant professor of research role, where we're working with the Texas Department of Transportation and trying to understand or to make sure that cars don't head off lots and put like crossings over highways and stuff like that. So like, that's what I'm working on now. And actually, we're looking at a project that we might be starting this spring or summer in Africa.
Nice.
And it would be in Botswana, doing potentially stuff with leopards and using cameras. And so like, that's something that could happen. It's just like, okay, now I like big dreams of doing like really cool research, not in the US, but like the stuff that you see on the Discovery Channel when you're growing up in Jersey or Philly and you're watching it, thinking to yourself, oh, that's so cool, I would love to do that. But really, in the bubble of New Jersey or Philly or New York, you're sitting there like, think at your house, and it's like, that's something that's like, you think about, but it's like, not even possible.
Right. I think the difference was for you was like just the opportunities that were presented for you, which, you know, everybody has their opportunities, but the difference was with you was that you took them. You took the opportunity and really ran with it. Like, there was not really a second guessing of the opportunity when it was presented.
Right. And I think for a lot of people, sometimes they don't do that. They have certain things, and when things are presented, they're like, I'm going to stay here and try to just do stuff in this area, or like, I don't want to move anywhere. Or so you stay and you really hamper yourself, versus me, I'm like, I'm moving to Florida, I'm back to Jersey, I'm going to go out to Washington, back to New Jersey, now I'm going to go down to Texas. And then I'm going to be in Texas, but now I'm going to move to Georgia, but actually I'm in Virginia, back to Georgia, and Georgia back to
Now, like, because a lot of people, I guess, talk about like goals and like writing down where you want to be. It seems like what you told me, I don't know if you had like goals written down or like a real path on being where you are today. Like, how did you really come about that and make that what it is today?
I didn't have it written down.
I feel like there's a lot of people in that position where it's like, you don't have the goals written down. You kind of know what you want to do a little bit. Mm-hmm. You have your heart somewhere, but you just, you know, you're kind of chugging along. Like you said.
The one big thing I do have to say is that my friends, they thought I was probably crazy for doing what I wanted to do. Because all my friends are like in medical sales rep, they're in tech, they're in accounting, they're like entrepreneurship, like business, landscape, it's just a normal job. And so like me, I'm just over here, but they knew I was passionate about it, and they knew, okay, you're passionate about it, this is what you want to do, and we support you in that. It's like, I'm not going to see them all the time and hang out with them all the time, but they support me and they know when I'm back in town and stuff like that. So like, that helped. And then having my family support in that, but them also kind of hoping I was to find they probably hoped I was home, but they also gave me that support to go do it, even if they really had no idea what I was even doing. Or like, my mom was like, no, don't go there. Well, what are you doing?
What are you doing in the middle of the woods?
Yeah, right. We're doing it in the middle of the woods.
Why do you have 1,000 chickens pooping on your car every day?
Right. Yeah. Like, I don't know how you do it or something. And so, but having that really is what pushed me in getting here, and really was that desire to get a PhD. But for anyone else, you just have to do what you think is best for you. And if you have a support system, or even if you don't, because that is the reality. The people who don't have a support system, but you just have to think, if this is what you want to do, you just got to do it, and you just got to keep going. Especially even if someone in the failed almond, you just got to keep going. You can't get to these. You just have to just put yourself out there, internship.
Absolutely.
And if your financial means or other means, you can't snowball over, because there are people who can't. They are where they are. You just have to do whatever you can, whether it's doing so remotely or volunteering or like find ways to do what you can,
right,
to get where you can. And then once, because over time, all that will build up. And so that's really like the big thing. And so, what do I say? Yeah. And you just have to like keep going. I think growing up in the Northeast and having the friends that I had, the mindset I had wasn't a normal person who knew exactly what to do in this field and the college and everything. They grow up like hunting and wherever case may be, or whatever, or that were in like rural areas. So they kind of knew what to do.
Right.
If my mindset is more like a business, like entrepreneurial type mindset coming into this, I knew what I wanted to do, but I had really no idea what I was doing. Right. And I'm kind of like going in blind and like kind of, I had all these intense encounters and shit, but the reality is I had no prior experience in that. So I'm taking it. It's not like I had that bear encounter and I had seen bears as a kid when I was in the woods with my dad and we were hunting. Like that was the first time I'm encountering it. And I'm like, oh, wow.
So were there any like points along your path that, because I know you had like a strong support system, like a strong cast that, and a lot of people don't have that.
Right. Yeah.
Was there any points along the way that like you felt as though that you maybe didn't want to continue, or maybe, you know, something just kind of life happened and it just threw you off course?
Yeah. I would say after college, when I had no idea what I was doing, really no idea. And I like did that internship, came home, couldn't find an internship or a job. I didn't get into grad school. I didn't know. And I remember sitting in my car and I was in my failings and shit. It's just like, you're just like, what are you doing? Like you're working at a restaurant. What are you doing? Do I just like become like a cop or something? I like to go into construction. It's like, I don't want to work in a zoo, but I want to like, maybe I just feel like do some kind of, yeah, I was like a fireman or like, just like, and then I said, you know what, let me not think about this, and went home or whatever. And then after a while, I'm like, you know what? No, keep going. But like that whole intense feeling was a big moment, but it only lasted like 5-10 minutes or so. But I remember it happening. I remember right. That 5-minute moment. And so that was one that I just have to keep going. And then when I was in Virginia, you're working in the park and you're there in the mountains, you're by yourself. And there are times like you're just there overlooking this huge area and thinking, this is really awesome, but what am I doing? I'm living here by myself in the mountains alone, doing all this awesome, cool work. Professionally, everything's going great, but I really have no one. I'm just like here. And then like doing the awesome work here. And then it's just like all this stuff now. And then the COVID happens. I'm still doing my work and stuff. And it's like, and then it's like, I get my PhD. And it will happen to everyone in no matter what, whatever they do, whatever, you're in business, finance, entrepreneurship, whatever the case, whatever it is, you're on a team, you're doing a weightlifting or whatever, whatever like ultimate goal you have for yourself in the next like 5 years or so, or 3 years, or say you're lifting and like you have a certain bench press goal of whatever case may be. Whatever that ultimate goal is that you see at this point that you can get to, once you get it and you don't necessarily have a defined goal after it, then you get it and you're like, oh, what do I want after this?
Yep. Yep.
So because you're just so focused on this, you're not thinking about this, but you really need to as you get closer And I was just thinking about this and kind of what I wanted to have. It's kind of like when I was in college. I just wanted to graduate and I wanted this, but I wasn't really thinking. So, but I knew what I had to do. That was the whole different thing between college and the end of my PhD. I got to the end. I had a job after it because my boss had offered it to me. So that was in my back pocket to say, but I was like, I didn't have so
something beyond that to really look forward to.
Right. And so like, even now I'm thinking to myself, do I want to stay? So my position here is funded for another year and a half. And so usually most people ride this out and they finish out their grand thing. But a lot of postdocs, it's not uncommon because it's a postdoc. The position's only for a year or so or a year and a half. And so, and then you really need to find another job before it or immediately after so you can leave and go somewhere else.
Right.
Or what some postdocs do is they work for 6 months and then they get a permanent research job or they become a professor somewhere or they work for like an agency. So the postdoc is really you're doing work, you're advancing your career, but it's really a stopgap almost. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're doing this to get the, it's almost like they created this other thing. So they had the goal and they pushed the goal markers back. So like, oh, you want this? Oh, no, you do this first, then this. And some people can get this here, but not quite. Or you'll have one post. Oh, you should only do two postdocs. And so they keep trying to move it back. And so, yeah, so I'm kind of going into that now and just trying to think like, okay, I'm here. But like for me, I would really love to kind of, and I think like you don't want to get too, you keep wanting to challenge yourself. And whatever you do, you get your goal. You don't want to get comfortable. And I, in the last few months, I felt myself getting comfortable. And then I realized, no, don't be comfortable. Set new goals. If you want to work in another system or for me, we'll work with other types of animals or somewhere else. Like that's not something that you should be ashamed to say. It's like, that's a goal that I have in the future. That's what I eventually know. I can't be here for long. I'll need to like spread my wings. It's like, that's kind of, you keep wanting to evolve. And
so like that. For people that like lose motivation along the way, how do you maintain the motivation to keep going with what you're doing and like to look beyond after the year, you know, what your, the year is up? Like where's the motivation coming from? Like I'm sure before it was like maybe when you were in school, it was like, you know, your mom or like family, yeah. You know, but now it's, you're kind of on your own and like,
right.
What is it?
I work out probably like 6 days a week or so. And so I mentioned that because like that helps. It's gets me going all day and kind of gives me that extra. Okay. So like I'm focused on that. And because of that, it gets me up in the morning and I can start my, because I'm in the gym at 6 and then I'm done. I'm like, okay, well, let's just go. Right. And so it gets me in that mindset. And then I just kind of just go with it. I'm just like, okay, I need to get this stuff done. And just, we have our goal that we have. It may not happen overnight. Let's just keep plugging away because life comes at you fast. And like sometimes you just have to be ready for something to come to you and you don't know when it's going to be. And sometimes when those things happen in your life, that it is a opportunity that you may want to take, but you may not think you're ready, but you kind of are, but you don't think you're ready, but they're giving you that opportunity to really, they see something in you or what case may be. So like, you gotta say like, I'm just gonna take a chance. And because you know you have some of it, you may not have all of it, but use that some of it to just take the opportunity. Because you can not do it and then you'll regret it. Because I don't like to regret anything that's in the past, and you try to forgive and forget, but you'll hate yourself for like, I should have done it. And then it's like, I should do this. I could have other scenario. And that's not a good kind of scenario to be in. You just got to take that opportunity, take that.
Do you have any, like, I guess, mental things that you go through when you're like getting over fears? Cause I go through it myself with certain things. Well, a lot of things, actually. I guess it's just like human to go through fearful, I can't do it, or maybe I'm not good enough type of mindset when you're approaching something. Is it like anything that you do in particular to like push yourself through that point, like that you may like start, you know, denying yourself from something?
So like for me, for someone who has anxiety, who has, and I'm mature enough to say it, have anxiety, to have depression. And so like those two things get stigmatized, I think, a lot. But like we are humans, and like everyone goes through their own shit. And so regardless of what kind of successes you have, there's always those things that kind of pull you down. But it's not necessarily an external thing. It's really like an internal thing. Like you're thinking, I don't want to do this. And so you just got to keep on that goal. But it's not a smooth path, or it's not necessarily a smooth path the whole time. And right. So, but as long as you have that goal and you really want it, you're going to have that back and forth the whole time. Or like how I am right now, I feel fantastic, but there's always, but like not a month ago. And so like, you just have to keep going, and there's going to be times that you'll want to quit and not want to do it. Like, I don't want to do this for now. And you're kind of just doing what you can. You're kind of like in that maintenance phase, or you're working out and you're like, I don't want to push myself this far. I just want to maintain what I have right now.
Right.
Because I can't even bother trying to go up in size or really make those big jumps or something. Like, I don't want to get that big. I like the way I look. I don't want to be real bulky or get real cut. Like, I just kind of want to stay at that spot. And everyone gets that way. But eventually, you can't stay that way in your whole life. You just have to find a way to get out of it.
Right.
Because you need to advance yourself in some way. So, and there's going to be those trials and tribulations that you might go through, that you may experience externally with people you love or friends or other things that you experience. You might go through that while you're going through some personal stuff, while you have your goals in front of you.
Right.
That's what we all go through in our own life. But as long as you have that goal, just keep going for it. And just don't quit. Just keep going, because there's no one that's stopping you. Well, just go for what you want to do in your life and chase after it.
Absolutely.
And if you decide halfway, like, this isn't for me, but this other thing I think I want to do, and I really would like, you can change your goals halfway or a quarter of the way, but then find something else and get after that. And so everything's possible. If a kid from Jersey in your metro area in the suburbs can end up where I am doing research on wild and endangered cats, living in an area that's far away from things, not where I grew up, doing a job that some people are like, oh, that's so cool, I would love to do something like that. For me, if I can do this from where I grew up and where I'm, anyone can achieve anything that they do if they live in the inner city, if they live in a rural area and say they want to work in like a downtown city, being this like high executive or something in some company, you're in some rural area, think, how the hell am I going to do that?
Right.
That's not my world at all.
Good.
But you could do it. That's the thing. Anyone could do anything.
Absolutely. Is there, I wanted to ask you before we get out of here too, like, is there any opportunities that you might have missed that you kind of not regret, but you look back on and say, damn, I should have took that, or I should have did that?
Yeah. I think the first one actually would have changed my path completely was not going to college where I went to college. Because had I known where like good schools were from my program that was kind of close to Jersey, I would have gone to like Penn State or like University of Delaware or like SUNY, like ESF or UConn or like stuff like that. And so that would have changed my directive because I would have gotten that experience in college that I didn't get till afterwards. Right. And so maybe at that juncture, I get my PhD at 26, not 32.
Right. Right.
And so then what I'm doing now, I did 5 years ago. And so like everything begins to completely change. And so, but like that's one. And like, it's just, if I see like an internship or whatever, just apply for it. Well, like if anyone sees any kind of opportunity, like, as I said, just apply. The worst they can do is say no. The best they can do is say, the worst they can do is just say no flat out. They can say no, but we really liked your application, or we see you're really bright, and then maybe hear some suggestions or something. Because that's a loss, but it's a win also. Because they didn't pick you, but they saw something in you to give you some advice to help you out in the future. And sometimes you can't, when that happens in your life, you can't chalk that up as a loss. That's a win.
Right.
But it's not going to be yet. But that's a win because they gave you something that you could use to get to that spot again.
Yep.
And so it's those little things that people need to pay attention. You didn't get the job, but they said something. It doesn't even have to be give you. They can literally just say a word or a phrase or like, hey, just suggesting next time you should do this, or we enjoyed it, or a case. It could be a phrase, a sentence. That one thought in your head could be, oh, and then you go. And then when that opportunity comes again, then you get it.
Right.
But you can't think of those as losses. Think of those as wins in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they all that,
right. Yeah. And so like those little things, when you're feeling down, just keep going. And so really like that's, yeah. So.
Oh, that's amazing, bro. And congratulations on the doctors, man. I went back for my master's and yeah, man, I still got like 2 classes left to finish up. But just going through that process with the master's, I can only imagine what you went through to get your doctors.
Yeah.
And again, you know, you went through everything that you went through with being in the middle of the woods, and bear encounters. It's just so much that you went through, and you're just really getting started. Like that's what's bright for you. I know you said that you kind of missed the opportunity, and you would have did everything earlier. But I feel like a lot of the things that we do in our life, we weren't meant to be there just yet. You know,
right. Yeah.
I think you're in the perfect place in your life right now where you're getting to enjoy what you're doing and you have a good head on your shoulders on where you're going forward with things. Yeah. So, man, I appreciate you sharing this story with us and just everything, bro. Like, yo, keep it going. And I know you got a lot planned ahead. You know, what's the next big thing for you? I know you were talking about Africa, but what's the next big thing for you? Or small thing, because it takes small things to get to the big thing. So we just talked about that.
Yeah. So, well, I got a grant from U.S. Fish and Wildlife to do some ocelot work. So we'll be doing that in March. And so like, that's like a big thing. So like, and then just kind of working on some of the other projects we have going on. But I think really a big thing for me coming up is with this COVID stuff going on, if I can get if my parents can get a vaccine or whatever, kids, like just be able to get home to like just see family. Cause almost like something like that is something I feel like you just as a person and you don't see family and friends for so long. And that can really help you get up. But I have some things that I want to do in the future. As I said, I kind of need to spread my wings somewhere. So. But when that happens, I don't know. And we'll just keep plugging here and keep working on the cats, and we'll see where life takes me. So,
oh man, that's amazing, bro. And again, I appreciate you just sharing your story and everything today. I'm sure a lot of people are going to take a lot from this, or at least one thing, because there's always just one thing that you can
right.
take from something to advance your life or move forward. But again, man, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. Thank you for having me and letting me share my story here.
Of course, man. And again, man, look, I look forward to seeing where you go next. So I'm sure we'll have like a part two or something to this.
Yeah.
Who knows what the future holds? So
yeah.
Stay tuned.
Exactly, man. Yes.
All right, brother.
Exactly, man. All right, man.